Today's episode of Sactown Talks is brought to you by Cielo Acai Cafe in Roseville. Acai is a berry found in the Brazilian Amazon. It is a superfood and an antioxidant as well. Cielo serves acai in delicious bowls and smoothies, and they also offer vegetarian and vegan food as well. They brew temple coffee and offer a relaxing atmosphere to enjoy their healthy treats. Visit them in Roseville and mention Sactown Talks for a free brewed coffee with any purchase. We're also brought to you by ESAC BJJ, your host's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy, where we believe in Jiu-Jitsu for everybody. That means we foster a positive and inclusive environment so that everybody feels welcome to come and discover a stronger version of themselves. Don't wait for the new year for a new you. Join the fun today at ESAC BJJ. You'll have fun, make new friends, and learn how to defend yourself too. I'll see you there. And we're recording, and we're live too. Thanks for joining us. Tom, thank you so much, man. Just to sort of give folks who are listening sort of an insight into what we're doing here. You and I met online, would you believe it, almost a year ago.
Okay, yes.
When I had...
Noel,
yeah.
Right, I remember you were doing a program with Noel on Thanksgiving, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so I got a note from you. I got a note from you because you're the author of Sack Homeless Blog.
Right.
And you sent me a very, a very nicely worded note and talking about sort of your hope for sort of just what's to come at Loaves and Fishes. And you were a little bit critical of Sister Libby's sort of leadership there, which is okay. And we're not here to bash Sister Libby
right.
or anything, but
sure.
You're just kind of, you had a vested interest because you and some of your friends and sort of like you're part of Homeless World, right? And so that's an institution in your world, and you kind of wanted to see it ran better. Is that fair?
Yes, I think that is fair.
Can you just tell us a little bit about that letter and just sort of like what you're... And how's Noel doing? Like, how's Noel... And, you know, guys, we're going to talk about it all. This is just sort of... We're just kind of recounting how we met. How's Noel doing? What was the issues with Sister Libby? Just talk us through Loaves and Fishes if you want, or we can skip it.
Sister Libby, I don't think there were problems with Cowboy Bob was killed, and I shouldn't say I hold her responsible, but she seemed not to be doing her job in the most effective way, and it resulted in some people being hurt, and I think that was kind of consistent during her leadership. What I just said sounds more cruel than I really mean it, but I don't think she was up to the job all the time.
Who was Cowboy Bob?
Oh, he was a fellow who, at the time near the end of his life, he was going to be working for at Loaves and Fishes, and I think he at one point he was directing a vehicle that came into the cul-de-sac there. And he ended up getting hit by the car, and he died when he was taken to the hospital.
Oh my goodness! And so he was directing it, kind of waving it on, or?
Yeah, I'm not sure, at this point. I'm not sure exactly what he was doing, but he was wanting to direct the car to park somewhere, perhaps something as easy as that, and it just didn't happen. I think the guy in the car was a chef somewhere, and he was on some kind of high, and he ended up...
Was he a guest as well?
No, I think he was looking for drugs, and he ended up...
At Loaves and Fishes?
Well, yeah, in the Loaves and Fishes area. I think he got off the wrong road or was a little miscombobulated about where he should be going.
Yeah.
And so he hit Cowboy Bob, and Bob was in the... Actually, was in the hospital for a while before he died, but the chef drove away and then realized that he needed to call the police, and he did. And so,
oh my goodness!
So that was one thing that happened, but there are some other things that just seem not to have been done very well.
How did Cowboy Bob get the name?
I'm not sure how he got caught the cowboy. I mean,
it's a cool name.
It is. But what's interesting to me is that I came to know him because we realized we both had the name Tom, and Tom is this name that is kind of going out of style, I think.
Yeah.
And so I think especially in Christian circles, since we're Toms are the guys that are the doubters.
Are they really?
Yeah, in the Bible, it's Doubting Thomas.
I'm embarrassed to say I don't know. Tell me.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know religions. I'm a Buddhist, if anything.
Okay.
And so I can't really speak to this, but yeah, in the Bible, Thomas was the fellow who didn't quite totally believe Jesus and wanted to be sure that he was actually wounded, so he stuck his fingers in.
Oh my goodness! Or something. Oh no! Oh no!
I don't know. There was the story is something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I wish I was. I personally wish I had more faith. You know, I would love to sort of have the comfort that faith brings and the guidance that it brings. And sometimes I wonder if I'm maybe not a little bit morally sick for not having faith.
Oh, well, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I go to the Union Gospel Mission. I'm there a lot of the time, most of the time. And the guys in the chapel are overwhelmingly Christians. I don't absolutely know that, but they sing the songs and
yeah.
And they cheer at certain messages they receive from the pastors who come up and talk to and deliver a sermon or a testimony of some kind.
Yeah.
So they're all legitimate Christians, but I'm dubious about all of that, which is kind of not accepted by people.
Well, certainly if you're hanging around the mission all day.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, I just see like the faith and the comfort and the courage that faith can bring, and I wish I had that in my life. I'll give you an example. I was we took my wife Haley and her you know, her two kids Allie and Blake. We took them to the haunted castle in Ione, the haunted house in Ione.
Yeah,
and Allie was a little bit kind of scared. She was like a 12-year-old, you know, child. And I was kind of joking around with her, and I was like, well, you know, it's okay. They have ghosts here, but it's okay. They're friendly ghosts. And she says,
Casper.
Yeah, it's like Casper. Yeah. She didn't know Casper. And I was like, and she says, well, how can a ghost be friendly? How can somebody that's dead be friendly? And then Blake, who, I mean, this, you know, Blake is so wise, you know, without missing a beat, he just says, Jesus is dead and he's friendly.
Oh yeah, that's touching.
That's touching, right? It's beautiful. And I just thought to myself, wow, you know, like I wish I had that, you know, to Blake and to Allie and to my wife. It's not a bunch of fables. It's not a bunch of stories. It's real courage. It's real comfort. It's real companionship. And you know, I always kind of start thinking about faith and towards the end of the year, you know?
Yeah. It's the season for that.
Yeah. You know, but you know, you also see it misused, you know, like what we're seeing with the Catholic priests and all this stuff. So I get it. And that's, you know, like I'm sort of a little bit apprehensive about the whole thing too, but sometimes I wish I had it, you know. Faith has been an instrument of sort of like an instrument of sort of trying to reach out to homeless world, right? At Union Gospel Mission.
Yes.
How do they sort of like bring it all together like that? They, like you said, like they invite people to sort of kind of learn Christianity as part of their outreach, or
right? They have a program that yeah. That they tout, and which guys will talk to a pastor and they'll join the program and they'll be taught all the, I mean they'll go over the Bible and they'll talk about that and they'll talk about Jesus and how it all makes sense.
Yeah,
and I'm from the outside of all of that, and I don't hear, you know, one hundredth of all that they talk about, but it just it doesn't make sense to me that Jesus died for our sins. He doesn't need to have died. If Jesus is the Son of God, he doesn't need to have died.
Or us, yeah.
We don't need to talk about the blood of Christ and stuff. That just seems a little alienated from what I...
From what makes sense to you.
From what makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, here we are, two skeptics raging
against
the machine. We probably shouldn't be saying it.
Yes.
You know, UGM, forgive us. You know, we connected and we sort of said, hey, like maybe it'd be great to have you on the show and just sort of talk about some of the things that you've seen in homeless world. One of the first things that you talked to me about was patient dumping.
Right. There's this fellow, Danny, that I've known since about 2008.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of work to do. So I was communicating with him. And I actually, at the time, I was trying to get him a job at Loaves and Fishes because I was thinking he was going to be moving on from the mission. But he ended up staying at the mission. He's a very talented fellow. And so he had me do some things for him, which was to interview these guys who were being dumped by hospitals and dumped and left at the mission for the mission to take care of. Just that they, and you know, a taxi pulls up and just drops them off and dumps them here, there, and that happens every once in a while. It continues to happen.
So how does that work? Like, you show up at the hospital at the emergency room and you say, I don't know, I've got an infection in my leg, or I've got whatever, you know, and they kind of bring you up to the minimum acceptable standards of when they can get you out the door.
Yeah, pretty much like that. But in some cases, I wouldn't say it's up to the minimal standard yet. Because there was one fellow, I guess I can name Claude, whose doctor told him that if he did any more drugs, and there's some specific drug, I don't remember what it was, but if he did continued to do drugs, then he would be dead, because he was so far gone, or so far on the at near the end of his life, literally, because of what he was doing, and so he needed to reform
his body.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's not that they're really prepared to move into the mission. It's that the hospital doesn't want to take care of them, or doesn't want to spend the money, or doesn't have a fund for that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, like Claude, what he really needs is maybe like, you know, maybe like a week or something, like in a program or something like that, to kind of help get them down the road or something, you know, something like that.
Well, the program is kind of, it's, he needed to be in a healthier situation. He needed to be taken care of for a longer while than he was at the hospital.
So when does the hospital, I mean, let's just think through this, right? Like, not necessarily on anybody's side, but
okay,
like,
sure.
When does the hospital, you know, they set up shop to, I don't know, to make money. They set up shop to help the community. They set up shop to, you know, it's kind of interesting. You can't help but think about, like, what's the mission of the hospital, right? Like, and you have to think, well, gosh, maybe some things shouldn't be done for money, you know, like curing people, you know, like if it's a, I guess what I'm saying is, like, if the hospital's like a money making operation, like, when do they incur the, like, when do they become obligated, you know, to take care of anybody and everybody? But at the same time, just on a human level, like, well, you should, you know, you have the resources.
Or at least there should be a middle plan of some sort. Like, if you are going to put them in some kind of housing situation, or some kind of both care and and housing situation, then that sort of that sort of thing should exist. It doesn't. I mean, the mission isn't in the circumstance where it can help people who are too far outside.
Too far gone.
Yeah, too far gone. There are guys at the mission who are schizophrenic or bipolar or a little scary. they need help, and Loaves and Fishes has some help that they can give to those people, and Loaves and Fishes, to its great credit, we'll look for the medical help that they need, or the legal help that they need to be able to right their lives.
Got it. What so we sort of, so for folks listening, so that they understand, the mission isn't a place to like, it's not permanent housing. They sort of give you two meals a day, you send.
Well, if you're one of the homeless guys who are basically bed seekers, what they'll do is they'll give you a bed for 7 days, and you can renew it. I mean, depending on how many people are seeking beds at the time, you have a good chance to renew your bed and to stay there for a while.
Yeah.
Ultimately, though, the idea is to get people into housing of some kind. And because they have that now, that they can call, people can call and call a navigator, or the latest thing, which is just someone who kind of directs people. They can get you in some kind of multiple housing or other kinds of housing.
In your view, how does that system work? Like, what are the pitfalls? Like, what's going right? What's going wrong?
What I've seen sometimes is like five guys might be in one house, and it's too many guys, and they have different personalities, and they don't get along. So that can happen. And that
does it ever just devolve into a party?
Yeah, there are. I've heard of circumstances where that's what it is. They're not supposed to have a lot of alcohol in their kitchen, but that's what they have.
Yeah.
So they're just kind of hiding it somehow.
Do you think it's? I mean, and maybe that's even better. You know, if they are going to party, maybe it's better they party with a roof over their head. And
right. Yeah, I'm not really. Yeah, I don't feel I can really judge the situation because sometimes it may be beneficial. It may be what they do. Maybe they have. They don't drink nearly as much as I'm supposing.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk like kind of at the state level and stuff about, you know, can we make this housing a priority? You know, a lot of group homes won't take you in unless you're sober.
Right.
And a lot of, you know, now I think, you know, in the last couple of years we're starting to say, well, wait a second, most important, get a roof over their head. You know, even if they aren't sober, even if they aren't, you know, totally where you want them to be, get a roof over their head and then kind of help them, you know, then kind of help them along, you know, but right. Housing first is the idea, you know?
Yeah. I agree with that, except if it's totally housing first, there are going to be people who don't fit in. And I know those people and I hear from those people. And so they kind of fall out of the scope of housing for a while, and they'll try to fit in again some other way, or they'll come to the, you know, the Union Gospel Mission or another place where they can get a bed most nights.
And stay for a few nights here, stay for a few nights
there. Yeah, so there's all these variations, and in fact, there's a great many variations on what guys will do. I say guys all the time because it's obviously
homeless. Mostly guys.
Yeah, the homeless guys are mostly guys. But there certainly are women included in that group.
Hey, do you want some water?
Oh, I'm still working on the coffee. So.
Okay, cool. You got a smooth voice, brother. You sound good.
That's good.
What do homeless women have to deal with?
Homeless women are interesting. There are homeless women at the mission outside the gate. There are women who are sleeping on the.
When I went to look for you that day, there was a couple women out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're down by the river, and they're around the corner. There's an area where there are quite a few. Currently, there are quite a few tents up, so they'll stay out there. So the police are always seem to be wanting to roust everybody who's homeless out on the streets and get them out of there.
It's like, well, where do you want them to go?
Right, and they end up not going anywhere. They just end up getting their sidewalk cleaned, and then they resettle. It seems to be what happens.
Yeah.
And what also happens is there are a lot of loving citizens who come by, and they drop off peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and complete meals, and they can be amazing. So there's a lot of food for people out on the street in front of the mission and on Ahern Street in front of Loaves and Fishes. So if you're homeless, you're not going to starve to death, or not easily.
You were telling me a story earlier about a pretty heavy homeless guy.
A pretty what?
The guy that takes fifths at the mission.
Takes fifths?
We were talking earlier about, you know, before we got on the mic, at Starbucks, we were talking about, you know, how you're not going to starve if you're homeless. And he said they'll give you, you know, it's pretty basic food, but they'll give you seconds if you ask for it. And
right.
He said the big guy takes like, you know.
Right. Some of these issues have been coming up very recently, that there are guys who, The food preparers are very generous. They want to be very generous. They have big hearts, but they can overfeed people sometimes.
Yeah.
So there's one fellow who I saw who had his tray, and he had like, I'm sitting close to him, and I know he's eaten his first helping that he can have with an item in each section of the tray. Right. Yeah. There's these square sections.
Those are cool, man. I wish I could still have them. I remember those from like elementary school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's right from elementary school.
Yeah. Dude, I don't love having my food touch each other.
Yeah. Yeah. You get it all very separate that way.
I like that.
Yeah. I do too. And, but this one fellow, he would go back for seconds, but then he came back with a tray that had, you know, three items topped on top of each other for like each square.
Like a double-decker bus of food.
Yeah, so he had thirds and fourths and fifths of food, literally. Yeah. And he's a very big fellow, and that you are not helping him to give him that much food.
Yeah. It's so interesting, right? Because people get into the business. I'm not going to say like business in a money-making sense, but they get into feeding homeless people because they have big hearts.
Right. And so they have big spoons that they can put into the trays.
It's like, hey, maybe for this guy, nutrition's an interesting, it's a hard thing too, because you don't want to deny anybody food. And, you know, like what that guy needs is like maybe a little bit less food. He needs some physical exercise besides just walking around creation. You know what I mean? He probably needs some better orthopedic support on his big old feet. Probably could stand some weight and resistance training or some cardiovascular activity, the list of what he needs to sort of get him going is like this long, you know, but hey, I got some food right now. And if you want some food, then that's all I can give you. Yeah. It's a piece of my heart. Go ahead and take it.
Right.
You know?
It's a very loving thing that they give him all that food because he wants it. Well, I want to say there are a lot of big guys at the mission, so I'm not really picking on one very specific person.
Yeah.
Though actually my brain is thinking about one specific person.
That's okay.
But hey, right.
So homeless women, though, is there anything, like, is the landscape different for them? We were kind of talking about this earlier.
There's been a curious circumstance, I would say, in the last couple of months where the women have gone crazy. They are outside the gate and they are yelling at people and hating on people, and then they come inside the gate and they're doing that too. And women have gone crazy for a short period of time. So I'm not saying it's damning of women as a gender, but right now in front of the mission.
You know what's crazy is when I went down to, we missed each other the last time we were going to get together. It's no problem, but we missed each other. But I went down there to see if I could introduce myself to you down to the mission.
Yes.
And, I kind of knew what you looked like from your little thumbnail on the homeless blog. Cool picture, by the way. Yeah, I think you have the pencil in the picture, too.
Not sure.
I went down there to look for you. And the folks at the mission were very nice. They're actually fixing up a bike. But they said, oh, you know, he might be on this street down here. So I just kind of cruised around. And what do you know? There was a couple of women. They were just... You know, all the guys were kind of just kind of quietly sitting and just kind of waiting for something to happen, as you say. But
right.
this one woman, didn't, and again, not the damn woman as a gender. This is just actually my experience. This is just literally what happened. Yeah.
Right.
But she didn't like the truck being on the street at all. She's like, get out of here. You know, I threw something at the judge. It was like a thing of juice or something she kind of threw. You know, I was already driving away. And just like very like angry, very mad, you know.
Right.
It's got to be a different toll that I mean, women generally take the brunt of all things, you know, war, poverty, crime. Everything's harder on women. It's tough. I actually maybe 6-7 months ago, I was driving over to Guitar Center on Arden to get the supplies for the podcast, and I almost got out of my car, man, because there was this homeless man and woman, and they were kind of walking down Howe.
Okay.
And she was trying to get his attention and talk to him, but he was like walking past her and like very like upset at her and ignoring her. And she was like, oh, please don't leave me. And he kept walking at her. And then he had a big gulp from 7-Eleven.
Okay.
And he like took the lid off and kind of splashed some at her. I was like, oh my God. And then she kind of like ducked back and then kind of came back to try and engage him. And then he turned around and he raised his hand at her like he was going to hit her, like in plain view, you know. It's sad how people can just, like 100 other people in their car saw this, you know, like he like threatened to strike this woman, you know. I'm stuck at a traffic light and I'm waiting at this traffic light and I'm watching this happen, you know.
Yeah.
And again, he kind of threatens to strike her. And I was like, okay, if he threatens to strike her one more time, I'm running out of my car and beating the fuck out of this guy. I'm going to beat this guy's ass. Like, you know, God help me. Please don't let him do it one more time. I will fucking jump out of here and beat this motherfucker up. And so thank goodness my prayers were answered, because they cooled it, you know, they calmed down. And, but, you know, no one wants to see like a woman, you know, no one wants to see anybody get beat, you know, and that's actually, I think, a like included in the self-defense laws is you can come to the aid of others as well, you know. But, you know, being, we talked earlier about the sort of the casual violence on the street and stuff. And I have to wonder if women don't get some of that as well, right? And sexual violence and whatnot.
Yeah, what you described is almost typical. It's fairly typical. There are these battles between couples in which they're screaming at each other. And, you know, they have dogs to take care of, and they have things
they
need to achieve.
Yeah, they all have dogs. Why do they have dogs? Like,
a lot of people have animals. And, there's a group of us who do not think animals should be... we understand that people need their animals because they love their animals. And there's a shelter at Loaves and Fishes for animals. But it does seem like we're neglecting human beings when we're taking care of too many animals and allowing people to continue to, you know, adopt animals as they are. And I don't think that's something that should go on in homeless world. But
yeah,
it does. But you're right about some of the fights. They're completely off the wall. And there's screaming and hating and cussing, and it goes on, and it's not helpful for anyone. And some of it, I don't think that any of it really means anything most of the time. The couple is back together for the night because they kind of need each other to keep warm.
To stay warm.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Yeah.
Do you, how do you stay warm?
Well, if I'm staying in the dorm, then...
You're okay.
Yeah, I get a bed and I get a nice quilt. They have a lot of nice quilts. So the dorm is its own issue. It has certain problems, but generally, you know, you have enough warmth and you have enough time to get a good night's sleep if all goes well.
Yeah. What's wrong with the dorm?
Well, the latest thing is snoring in the dorm.
Yeah.
There's one fellow brought it up, and he's right. I mean, he said, well, listen tonight. I guess I sleep more easily than he does or other guys do.
Good for you, man.
You know, lucky me. Before I went to sleep, he pointed out, and it was obvious before I went to sleep that there were like five guys who were snoring very loudly. And then the next morning there was a guy who was still sleeping, and my friend pointed out, do you hear the snoring? Do you hear the snoring? So we need to figure out something. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I think that the upper management knows nothing about, because they don't go into
they're not in there sleeping with you guys.
No, they're not. I mean,
maybe they should have to, like, once every 3 months or something, spend the night.
Yeah,
there.
I think that would be a good idea. Kind of sneak in disguise if they did that.
Yeah, like an undercover boss type of deal.
Exactly.
UGM, you heard it here first.
Well, I'm kind of their undercover guy in replace of them. I mean, I'm not appointed, but I take on these roles for some reason. Blogger, I guess.
Because you're lucid.
I don't know if I'm lucid.
Oh, you're totally lucid. No, okay. You know, we were talking about this earlier. You're like, well, am I coherent enough to go on? I was like, yeah, dude.
I was scared to death.
You're more lucid than some of these other people I have on, you know.
Well, I hope so.
We were talking earlier about... let's go back to the dorm thing real quick.
Okay.
Do they wake you? Do they have like a everyone out by 7 a.m. type of deal, or everyone out by 8 a.m.? Or up drunk, will they let you in? How does this work? What are the ground rules?
I think if you show up drunk, they won't let you in. I mean, you're going to have a harder time getting in. I think you can disguise
your
drunkenness.
You might be able to hide it, right?
Yeah, you just can.
Kind of
definitely
your head down and just kind of peace.
No, that's literally that's true.
Put some peanut butter in the breath and
right, and so they can get in. So determining who can get in is something that JD does, and I'm not sure of what the elements are.
Will he literally be like, no, you're out? Like,
well, I mean,
you got to go somewhere else.
Well, yeah, there aren't two people in one bed. So, yeah, it's literally like that. But, I mean,
how do people take that?
Well, if you don't get a bed, then, I mean, guys are going, but it's cold outside. They're right.
Yeah.
And if they are right, then the mission tries to give them a quilt that they can use outside. And often the quilts, I think the quilts don't always come back to the mission. So
I'll bet, yeah.
When they give someone a quilt,
it's gone.
They are potentially losing it. And some of those can be, I mean, expensive at the long run. Yeah. And then the same thing with pajamas, by the way. Pajamas get lost very quickly, and that's something they're trying to deal with now, because guys don't turn in their pajamas. They just put their regular clothes on over them and make off with the pajamas often enough, which sounds kind of crazy because some of those pajamas are pretty ripped up.
Yeah. Those, it's almost kind of funny, isn't it? It's kind of funny, but it's absurd, and it's just dark.
They're all these, I mean, yeah, we get to...
All these emotions, like...
Well, there's the problem of guys that don't shower. And obviously, we need guys to shower.
I was worried you would smell. You know, when we got, you said, like, when you asked me, like, hey, are we okay? Am I okay? Am I lucid to come on? I was like, yeah, you know, like, I'm surprised, man, like... You know, I didn't know what to expect either. You said you didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to expect meeting you.
Well,
you
know, you're about 4 feet away from me, so I may smell.
No, we sat right next to each other.
Put your nose up here.
Anyone smells if you put your nose up there. But we sat right next to each other at Starbucks. You know, you're fine. You're clean. You don't even look like you look great.
Well,
like,
my hair is a mess, and I haven't shaved very well.
No, but I wanted to ask you about this, and I think some people would be sort of like interested to hear this. Is like, you know, typically you think homeless, you think mentally ill.
Right.
I think substance abuse.
Yes.
You know, and you don't really struggle with those issues.
Right. I smoked marijuana in the 70s, and that was kind of the end of it. And you know, I gave up cigarettes before that. So, and I just, I get invited for that sometimes, but I'm just not keen on doing that. And I don't know why.
Let me tell you, I've been invited to do that sort of stuff too.
You can take my invitations. And I'll send them forward them to you.
Well, no, it was a former life. But I was too keen on doing that. You know, I was telling you in the car, you know,
yes.
I slipped and fell and hit my head a couple times. I drank too much, you know. Now I keep it better. But you know, and I think you can be forgiven for the marijuana in the 70s, you know.
Right.
It's also not the same as it was today. The marijuana in the 70s had a very small percentage
right.
of...
If the current marijuana is legal, the marijuana from the 70s is super legal.
we'll petition Trump for a pardon for your marijuana use
thanks,
in the 70s,
thanks.
You know.
Be able to go on with my life then, thanks.
Yeah. But, I don't know if we could just kind of explore this. Like, you lost your home in 2008, you said? If you don't mind me just kind of talking through, like, how'd you wind up on the streets? Like, you seem so smart, right?
Yeah.
And I guess it can happen to anybody. And you wrote in your blog that after some time, kind of homeless world seemed interesting to you even, you know?
Yeah, no, it does. I mean,
it sounds interesting. Yeah.
There are a lot of curiosities and you wonder, well, what is wrong with this fellow? You know, and you realize from other guys who know better than I do, he's schizophrenic, or this guy is polarized. What do they call it?
Bipolar.
Bipolar. I told you I've had problems with some words.
That's okay. You're all right.
And you just kind of figure out where they are, and then you see if you can pass them on to Loaves and Fishes. Has some counseling that they could possibly benefit from, but some fellows, I guess, who are schizophrenic, there's not much you can do.
Yeah. But for your own story, you lost your house in 08?
I was out on the streets in 08, which was a, you know, very significant year. And
let me tell you, my family, we were this close to being out on the street in 08.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not the only one. And then what happened?
Then I got, I found a place to stay in West Sac, and I was there for a couple of years, and...
The motel?
I forget, Sky Ranch, I think it was called.
Okay.
And that, they gave me a real good deal, so I stayed there for a while, and eventually I just started moving around and staying at different motels.
You started you had the option to stay, but you started moving around.
No, I think they got tired of me, I think, because as I was telling you earlier, I think the reason I had the room, I had the room that was on the second floor, the only room that was on the second floor.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted to wanted to make more money from that room. And I think the daughter of the family that had the motel wanted to create an office there too, so
got
I
it.
Left.
Got it. And then you started just moving around.
Yeah. And at that point, it was 2008, and it was an amazing year in a sense.
How so?
Well, just because homelessness was a huge issue then. And it was the idea that, I mean, there were reporters coming from all over the world, and they were believing that, you know, the economy was of the world was going to collapse, I think was practically the sensibility that was going on at the time.
Yeah. How do you... you know, when you and I, when we were sitting at Starbucks and we were just kind of having like a cup of coffee and like we're talking here, and it seems like, you know, homeless world, you call it, right?
Yeah.
Like it's its own world. It's its own world.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's its own cast of characters. It's its own people that you see.
Right. It's like a movie.
It's like a movie. Yeah. and it seems like homeless world is one world. And then, you know, we could call it the housed world is another world. Right. And these considerations of the house of the housed world kind of seem like, I guess I would want to ask you in your mind, how does that sort of like you're watching the other movie kind of play out on another screen, but you're not really, I guess you're not really taking part in it. Right. Like you were in homeless world. You've always been in homeless world or you've been in homeless world for the last couple of years.
Right.
And here in housed world, everyone's losing their economy. Everyone's losing their house. Everyone's, you know, having, you know, economic trouble. You're like, no shit, we're, you know, we've been in economic trouble, try coming over, you know. It's like that movie's kind of playing over there, right? Like when you and I were sitting down at Starbucks.
Yes.
It's like those people wouldn't even look at us, you know, kind of like we're just kind of like there's this world and then there's kind of that world. Is that a good way to articulate it? Or
yeah, like, I think they are split from each other, and that's part of the problem of getting things to work and straightening things out. Homeless people are not ready to be housed in many cases, because they're going to probably need to be in a sort of a community house that has 5 beds, and then they're going to have people who are not thinking along the same lines that they are. And so you have these sort of things that are out of whack.
They need to cooperate.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, there are circumstances where it does work out, but I think that's less common than things that don't work out that need to be fixed somehow, that one guy needs to be replaced by another guy or something. They need to straighten it out so that people get along and are really happy, and that's hard to find because I think homeless people are so accustomed to not being happy. Yeah. That's part of it.
Do you, I guess what I'm trying to say is like you look at the headlines in the B or you look at the headlines in the Times.
Yeah.
And you'll see like, oh, we're going to war, or oh, the economy's down, or oh, Trump said something stupid. And it's like, to me, if I were to try and put myself in your shoes, I would almost think like, oh, that's also trifling. Like it's also kind of foreign and distant in another world. Like here, like the headlines in the homeless newspaper would be like, they're serving, it's corn dog night at the mission. You know, there's not enough beds. Cowboy Bill died, you know.
Right.
It's going to be an exceptionally cold and rainy year. Like they're like, you're like, are you almost kind of watching what's going on in the outside world as a movie? Like, it's just,
yeah.
Am I taking too many liberties there?
No, I think there are people who among the guys who are paying a lot of attention, say, to the sporting events that are going on out there. They know this stuff going back 20 years. Yeah. They know who was drafted in the
80s.
In the 80s, and so they pay a lot of attention to sports. They pay a lot of attention to the weather. I pay a lot of attention to some of the puzzles that are in the newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of crazy. So we are connected to, you know, normal people's world in a sense, because, you know, but we're outside of it also. I mean, it's like, it doesn't feel like it used to, you know. Listening to sporting events.
What does that mean? It doesn't feel like it used to.
Well, listening to sports. Well, I'm 64, so I'm when I listen. Yeah,
a lot
to
of things don't feel like they used to.
but yeah, it's like I'm outside of it. And but for a lot of the guys who are younger, I mean, they take their sports very literally, and other things that they seek to do they're very committed to. So, but there's every kind of variation. There are guys who work very hard and come to the mission and can only sleep for 6 hours there because they just got got home. I mean, they got to the mission after putting in some extra hours, and they need to leave the mission because they have to go to work.
Hours.
So,
how is it that you can be putting in so many hours and working so much, and still have to be a guest to the mission?
Well, I mean, the mission honors people who work in their program. I mean,
I get that, yeah.
So,
but I mean, why? Like, I guess my question is, in your experience, how many homeless people that you know have jobs?
I'm not sure what the count would be, but yeah, there are a few that are talk about their jobs. There's a guy who works for Apple.
He works for Apple?
Well, he works for, I guess he's a subsidiary of Apple, where he checks the machines that have been broken somehow, and he'll fix them. And he's supposed to be, I mean, from what he says, but I believe it, he's very expert at what he does.
Yeah.
And he can put in as many hours of overtime as he wants.
I'll bet you're always dropping these out. These
phones. Right.
They make them slippery.
Right. Yeah. And they make it so that the cover or the glass or whatever it's called can crack instantaneously. Yeah. So he does that.
Let me ask you about, I mean, do you think he earns enough to maybe rent a room on his own dime? Like,
or he's moving in that direction. I think he has left at this point. It didn't take
I guess
very
I'm just
long
wondering how that works. Like, you know, like why would a person with a job have to go seek the mission? Like, it, I would hope in this society, if you're working, you have enough money to rent a room or something, you know?
Well, I mean, the housing costs, I mean, rentals these days are so expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are guys who are, you know, like the morning chef at a restaurant or something. They're not chef, but at least a worker.
A sous chef, right?
Yeah. And they'll go to work and they'll also be sleeping at the mission. I mean, they can't afford to.
That's so tragic, man. That's rough.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's just very convenient too.
So, oh yeah.
So people will do what they can, and the mission tries to accommodate sort of some of these exotic needs that people have. Excuse me.
All good, brother. Let me know if you want some water.
I'll get some water.
Yeah, I'll get you some water here. Yeah. Boom, and we're back. Just kind of scoot in a little bit for me, if you will. Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
All good. And we're back.
Okay, where were we?
we were just talking about folks who work but nonetheless have to stay at the mission.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just kind of lamenting that could happen in today's society.
But as I guess I already said, to the mission's credit, they accommodate that. They want to.
Yeah.
Because of their feelings of, if people want to work, we want to help be behind them.
In your experience, how many people are out of their mind? How many people of the people that you meet, you know, how many of them are out of their mind? How many of them are, you know, substance abuse? How many of them just fell on hard times?
Yeah, some of the I'm not sure exactly if I can sort that out. I mean, some of them look like, I mean, you put them all together and they pretty much have the same diagnosis that they aren't living in the real world, perhaps, some of them. Well, I shouldn't say it like that. I'm worried that, but there are fellows who have problems, and they don't get directed somewhere. They just sort of continue to live, and maybe we'll do is pretty much what I'm doing, which is staying in the same place too long. So
you've moved around a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder, like, what that's got to be like is, like, you know, there's some days I love Sacramento more than others.
Yes.
But I think about, well, maybe I would move back to San Diego one day. Maybe I would leave. But over time, as you stay in one place, you kind of have the benefit of developing roots. You know, I can tell you that, like, my neighbor will pick up my mail if I need him to. You know, my neighbor will sort of come look after my garden if I need him to. And I've accumulated a bit of social capital here where I have friends and family here and now my wife that'll help me, you know. And you don't get to set down those roots if you're always migrating from place to place.
Yeah, I mean, just look, focusing on me being at the mission, I know some of these guys now, and I know kind of who's who's kind to me and who isn't. And it's hard to imagine exactly what I would do when I separate myself from the mission, but I need to at some point.
Do they ever tell you, like, hey, it's time for you to maybe move on?
They may be doing that soon, but...
Really?
I guess really. I was taken care of... taking care is not the right word, but I was useful, I think, to the mission in leading a couple of... guys who were significantly blind,
yeah,
around downtown, and helping them get some things done, and that was a value to them. But it's not something that somebody else couldn't have done also. And I think they like to kind of have people leave the mission and have new blood come in, and that's kind of how.
Otherwise,
they're
kind of just taking care of the same
right.
group of folks. Yeah,
yeah, and so that it. That's true for their program and for guys who have come in to use the dorm in a significant amount of time, I think.
Yeah. So then where would you go after that?
Well, I don't know. I guess that I think that I would try to get into some kind of housing. I mean, I'm going to be of retirement age here in about a couple of months, so I'll be in particular good place to start thinking about where I want to live.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm kind of rationalizing putting it off, I think.
Oh man, hey, you talked about one of the blind fellows that you kind of help lead around. It's kind of like a job almost that you do for the mission.
I started with I know this guy named Danny, who's one of the middle administrators there, and he had me write some text about guys who were dumped at the mission, and I would talk to them, and they'd tell me everything they knew about what happened to them over the last, you know, 3 months or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so that came off very, very well, and there were I guess three fellows actually involved in being interviewed by me.
Who dumped them?
Well, it was Sutter, I think, the hospital, I think.
Got it.
Or it could have been another hospital, but one of the hospitals downtown. And so the circumstance came up where this fellow named Mark was dumped at the mission. Not dumped at the mission, actually. He came with there was a group that was going to fix his life, basically. And
how'd that work out?
That didn't work out. The group dropped him off, and then they... were supposed to come every day for the next 2 weeks, and they didn't. I guess they may have come once, but they weren't helping him. They weren't finding anything, and they just weren't responding to his questions about what should happen now.
What's the purpose of these groups?
I think for them to make money.
Yeah. And we talked about this, right? Like I don't want to speak for you, but when we were having coffee, you were talking about just... you have some, like, you're kind of skeptical about some of these executives, about some of the management of some of these groups.
Well,
is that right?
Well, they're like, some of these groups, I think, have like two people involved, and I don't know what they're doing precisely, because they don't come back with any ideas or any appointments for Mark, for example, to have. And Mark was just sort of, Mark and I were trying to figure out how we can make him turn his circumstance into something that gets into the news, because he was a blind guy who had very little sight. He could see shadowy figures and certain colors, but otherwise he had nothing going for him. He needed to be able to work and play and see and. I see things or exist better than he was,
and so he shows up at the hospital, and they basically take him to the mission in a taxi or what?
Yeah, that's what happened. He was taken. I mean, actually, and there were circumstances where he came back. He walked the streets even though he's blind, and he could easily have been hit by a car.
Does he have a stick or something?
He doesn't have a stick, and
oh,
that was
goodness.
A complaint of his that rather ridiculously is something as
simple.
Inexpensive as a stick he didn't have. And he wanted a service dog too, but those are more expensive because they need to be trained first.
Yeah, and you probably need to be in a house environment if you're going to have a dog. So he shouldn't like Sutter or whoever, and I don't want to single Sutter out. And you know, we talked about this too. Like from their perspective, is like when, you know, like you open the floodgates and like you help everybody, it becomes very difficult, right? But I mean, shouldn't there be some sort of like high level agreement between Sutter management and Mission management and say, okay, like if we get these guys that come in and, you know, we stabilize them as best as we can, just so you know, maybe there's like, let's say a dozen people we need to discharge a month and we don't know where to take them. Let's square up with you on a managerial level. Just assume we might bring you about 12 guests a month after we've stabilized them. And here's some money for that, because we know it's not free. And then they're kind of helping, you know, are they doing that? You know, that's a question to Sutter. I don't know, but it seems like there's got to be a better way to sort of manage that, like that relief valve of, hey, we're going to have to discharge 12, 20, however many folks a month with nowhere to take them, where they're going to take them to Loaves, where they're going to take them to Mission, we're going to take them to the home, you know, to the shelter. Can we have some sort of like operating agreements where it's like, so it's not a surprise, you know, so that you have a point of contact, so that the dignity of the person that you're dropping off doesn't feel insulted.
You know? Yeah, I think everything that you're saying is very valid. Sometimes, right, they'll drop somebody off at the Mission, and there might not be any reason that it was the Mission that was chosen. It's just easiest for them to drop people off there. So they'll drop a guy off, and he'll be at the Mission. And the Mission, to its credit, is not going to throw him, you know, into the middle of the street. They're going to at least give him a night's rest, and they're going to try to contact the hospital and see if they can get into some kind of money agreement, I think is what happens, because I think there's a contract.
Oh, that's
good. For a lot of different people. There are guys who are in jail who sometimes are put on probation at the Mission, and there's a contract for that, I'm sure. That the Mission is being like compensated somehow.
Right.
And so why they would choose to have somebody taken to the Mission as opposed to Loaves and Fishes, I'm not sure. Loaves and Fishes does have some facilities. They have a place called Tender Loving Care, they used to, where it would be a housing for like four different guys, and then there would be one guy in charge in the house. And that was, I knew a fellow who was the guy in charge in one place, and he thought it was very successful, but I'm not sure what they're doing these days.
Yeah, you talked about a pedophile being allowed to stay, didn't you? One of the emails that you wrote me was that, you know, one of your issues with Sister Libby was that she let a pedophile stay.
Oh, right. There was a guy who was...
Was that at Tender Loving Care, or was that somewhere else? Or?
That was at Loaves and Fishes. He had a bungalow that was right near the school where the kids were playing, and she never checked his
whereabouts, or
his license or his background, and he had a history which included raping this one girl, and she never checked it out. And then
you got to check him out.
Yeah, the police finally asked to see his ID for some purpose, and they determined that, well, he was a fellow who's been on the streets for a long time, and we need to bring him in and prosecute him. And that they couldn't be prosecuted because of the time factor between when he was...
So he wasn't like a convicted...
He wasn't convicted yet. I mean, but, I think he would have been...
But he had a reputation for being a bad dude.
Well, he had committed a crime, but not a legal crime, because it hadn't been prosecuted yet.
Yeah.
And it couldn't be prosecuted because it turned out there was such a long delay in catching up with him.
Wow. How's Noel doing?
Noel is a good guy. I think he's doing okay. I'm not sure what I think about Loaves and Fishes these days.
Why is that?
Well, that's because they're a much more vulgar area
than they used to be, or what?
Than they used to be when I was there, like every, you know, very often.
Well, maybe Sister Libby had a hand in softening them all up.
I don't know. But yeah, it just...
What do you mean vulgar? Like there's just like, just everyone's manners have deteriorated there?
Or yeah,
like
I mean,
they're just kind of crude or...
Yeah, it's just, it feels different than Union Gospel Mission in that that men and women are yelling at each other and cussing each other out and just unhappy with each other.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's true in both places, but Loaves and Fishes is to a degree that I'm not accustomed to, I think. And I think the loaves and the guys from the mission generally also feel that way.
Yeah.
That this is not like the mission. This is a different culture here. And I'm not totally sure why I'm kind of repulsed by it, but I am. It's just not the same kind of world.
That's okay. You'd written a lot about your You'd written a lot on SAC Homeless blog.
Okay.
And you wrote about the panhandling decision.
Yeah.
Can you just kind of walk us through your thoughts on that? I mean, it seemed like surprisingly lucid and articulate and well thought out to me.
And, well, I'm not sure. Well,
and not even for a homeless guy. It was just well written, you know?
Well, I guess I differ from most, homeless knowledgeable pundits. I don't think that guys should be asking for money on street corners or on the streets generally, just because they're asking for a transaction where they don't really provide anything, but they just get money, and there's holding up keeping cars from moving on the streets, and I just think it's kind of a peculiar thing to be doing. But I do understand that homeless guys feel they have a need for having more money, as maybe do we all. But I don't think they have the entitlement quite that the law offices like Marin Law Office and Paula Lumazzi think that, they're poor, so they have a right to be asking people for money.
Yeah, you don't think that, even if there is a right, like in the Constitution, you don't think there should be, or that it's...
Right,
yeah.
Well, because it's we have a right to have a transaction with someone. Like, I'll trade you, this chair for your telephone or something. I don't know, that would be a transaction, but this isn't a transaction. This is something where you just walk up to somebody and you're demanding money. And often the way that the transaction is proposed,
kind of like intimidating.
It can be intimidating.
Yeah, it's kind of like detrimental to society, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, like there should be limits to free speech.
I wouldn't call it free speech.
You wouldn't call it speech, even.
Right, because I mean, you're not really
saying anything worth a damn.
Yeah,
you're not saying give me money.
Right, you're not saying something that's meaningful. It just doesn't seem like it's speech, because you're not making a deal. You're just demanding something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting, right? Like, okay. So if I were to knock on someone's door,
right.
If I were to knock on my neighbor's door, I know that like my neighbor is a homemaker.
Okay.
And she's oftentimes alone, I'm sure because I see her, I know her husband, I can hear her husband going off to work. So I know she's alone during the day.
Right.
If I'm a big, scary man, okay, and I knock on her door and I say, give me money, but I don't step inside. But I don't step inside and I just say, give me money right now. Why the heck should that be covered by free speech? I just went to her home. I intimidated her and I scared the pants off of her, scared the bejesus out of her, and I'm demanding money at her home, right? Maybe that's not covered by free speech. Or you're like, what if I storm into her living room and say, I'm not leaving till you give me money? So yeah,
right.
Why should that be covered by free speech? Okay, so that's okay. You storm into the living room and you say, give me money. That's not covered. Okay. You knock on the door and intimidate them in the middle of the night and you know they're alone. That's not covered. Okay. So why is walking up to them in the street covered? Like, when is the line drawn? Right. Does that make sense?
I think it does. But I do think there's a concrete difference between the two.
Sure.
I mean,
Yeah, I'm just kind of trying
to. It's not a line, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
But if you were to go over to your neighbor's house and knock on the door politely, like like that. And she were to answer the door and you say, I need to have $50, please. I mean, or let's say it's $5.
Yeah.
I think she ought to not give it to you. Maybe if she knows you well, and assumes
that
you're
going to
spend
it. They don't know me that well. They wouldn't give me it. I just repaired the fence between our two homes.
Okay, that does something, doesn't it?
I just repaired the fence between our two homes, and they were like, well, if you want, we'll split the cost with you. How much did you pay for the building materials? And I said, well, about $80. It's right. Just a little section of fence. You know, if you want, you can give me 40 for it. And they're like, sure. You know, I was like, okay, well, you know, when you have it, you can just put it in my mailbox. They never did.
Okay, well,
And then they took some junk from inside their house and they put it like in my driveway.
Oh, that was their present to you?
It was, yeah, they're strange folks.
Okay, strange folks. So you were dissatisfied. So next time you want some money.
Yeah. Oh, man. Hey, is there anything? We're getting up, would you believe it? We're getting up to an hour here.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quick, right?
Yeah. No, this has been very enjoyable.
Thanks, brother. Many thanks for you to coming on. Is there anything that we haven't covered that we should have covered?
Probably. But yeah, I think we talked about a lot of things.
Okay. Okay. Great. For folks listening, Sacramento Homeless Blog, a lucid and articulate, well thought out. Perspective on homeless world in Sacramento from a person who is articulate and lucid and intelligent, not for a homeless person, but for a person in general, just really insightful, man. And thank you so much.
Thank you
so much for coming in.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, brother.